This is Steve Sherlock with another in a series of podcasts for Franklin Matters. This segment will be part 8 of the budget workshop conducted on Monday, January 25th, 2010. Beth Fitzmaurice, Director of Special Education for the school district, continues her session covering the details of providing special education to the students in the Franklin School District, picking up from the transportation cost from the prior segment, covering the variables of budgetary impact, including the circuit breaker reimbursement process, and ending with a great statement. Special ed is not, in fact, a sentence. It is an opportunity to provide some specialized education, but there is a mechanism in the law to reevaluate the child every 3 years and to do a full battery of evaluation to redetermine eligibility. I think that's a great quote. She closes the session with it. There are a few documents associated with this particular session. They will be attached to the posting as we have in the prior sessions. So without further ado, let's jump in and listen to segment 8.
Any questions on transportation? I'm skipping back a little bit to out-of-district tuition. Out-of-district collaborative set their tuitions, and they're the most cost-effective. The private schools are governed by the OSD rate sheet that I showed you. Some that were highlighted in yellow, and if you go to the site, you can see it plain as day with all the footnotes and explanations of different types of reconstruction, and those are different options as well. The school district has provided some relief from special education tuition costs, through the circuit breaker model, and I wanted to talk a little bit about that, but before I do, let me these are our numbers that our encumbered dollars for out-of-district tuitions as of January 15, 2010, and that's how that breaks down right now. Again, our per-pupil expenditure for out-of-district schools is a little bit lower than the state average, primarily because our percentage of students who access their curriculum outside of our district is lower than the state average as well, so that sort of translates pretty proportionately.
What's the difference between the 3.8 on the
That's because we're obligated to spend our money this year, and then our reimbursement through circuit breaker is credited to us in the following year. It's not a same year savings. So it's not like I can say I'm going to spend $100,000 on out-of-district tuition, but I'm going to get $10,000 reimbursement, and I'm going to see that this year, so I really only have to plan on spending $90,000. It doesn't work that way. I have to spend my $100,000, and next year I get my $10,000 that I can take off of next year's. The logic is that you're always spending money, so there's always some sort of a savings year to year. Some years you spend more and your savings from the year prior. So it's a little bit variant, and it's kind of, I liken it to herding cats to keep track of the circuit breaker. Miriam is a master. She just tells me, and I believe her. The challenge with circuit breaker is any monies we spend on special education transportation cannot be claimed. There was a lot of discussion at the legislative level for regional transportation reimbursements and then for some special transportation reimbursements with circuit breaker. But again, that was a crazy formula with towns sharing, and like we do through a collaborative bid, and that really muddied the waters. So it was something that they decided they weren't ready to tackle, and they sort of put that on the shelf for now. A circuit breaker claim looks a little bit like this. You have X number of dollars that you have paid out in tuition, and then you subtract from that 4 times your foundation, and that rate is set by the state, the Office of Operational Services Division, the state finance folks. After you subtract that foundation from what you expended on tuition, you take about 30% of that, and that is your reimbursement that you'll enjoy the following year.
So this doesn't come with the easy rebate button.
No, ma'am.
No, sir.
In FY08, we had about a 72% reimbursement. 09 was 70. This year it was 35. And the word on the street is we're anticipating about a 30%. So every year we're seeing that reimbursement rate reduce pretty significantly.
That's something you don't see in the budget either.
No. This is outside of the budget.
And this is kind of like, you know, trying to, you know, do your income tax return. You try to look at every angle on a child, you know, every service on a child's IEP to get the best bang for your buck and get the best reimbursement that you can. And so it's really important that our special ed teachers, you know, they do a great job of really documenting all the service on the child's IEP. And, you know, our Secretary Rose, she spends umpteen hours inputting all this information, and it's not a simple formula as Bill just asked, and it's very, very complicated,
so,
it takes a lot of time.
Just so people understand, about how much money is spent before the circuit, per student, before the circuit breaker kicks in?
Last year, I think it was about 37,000.
Right, I just want people
to... You had to spend at least 37,000 for the child to be
eligible. Correct.
That's the foundation. And that number goes up every year.
Right. But then the reimbursement rate goes down.
Correct. And I go back to a couple of your comments, too, sir, about the moving targets, the different variances there, the number of students that can move in to our district, students that may move out of our district, though I'm not seeing a lot of that happening.
And what's the cutoff date?
April 1st.
But that's for private day and residential placements. If a student is in a collaborative program and moves in, you own them the day they move in. And some of our students, that's still not nothing. Some of the collaborative placements with specialized things can run up to $40,000 a year. So that is could be one of those unanticipated expenses that you would need to...
Because we're a desirable community to move into, we're a target.
That's an important point too. One of the things about Franklin, this is a very attractive community relocation. I'm not telling you anything that you don't know. For the entire area, there's about affordable housing. The special ed specifically, realtors are telling me, has an outstanding reputation. I've been here since August, and I've spoken to a number of realtors, and kind of say, oh yeah, Franklin's a great place to live if you have children with special needs.
There's a real access to
the Boston area for working and things. And so there's a recent trend of the high number of out-of-state relocations to Franklin. Franklin pops up in an awful lot of pretty attractive sites when you're searching for a place to live in this area.
Well, we're going to do something about that.
I think it's something to be proud of.
We'll take care of that this budget season.
Good work is always rewarded with more work.
So my understanding...
We need a scandal.
correct me if I'm wrong, is that the percent... that the special ed piece as a percent of the school budget has been, you know, rising pretty steadily. Would you say... Can you put a finger on what you would say the key drivers of that increases? Is it we just have more students, we have more outside parties involved? You're saying that can be a piece of it. The students are more have more intensive needs.
I think some of our students do have some intensive needs, and I think that we're continually putting a lot of effort into educating our students in our district. And again, we go back to oftentimes a less restrictive program is not less expensive, and a lot of effort, other cost drivers that I have here, contracted services, specialty services to come into our district, whether it be C-print captionists or vision specialists or educational audiologists, different specialized psychological services to support our students so that they're able to stay in their community school.
But are there more of those opportunities than there were 5-6 years ago? I guess I understand that it's expensive, but it's getting more expensive relative to the total pie. So I'm trying to figure out why that is.
State costs have been pretty consistent
as a percentage of the budget.
It looked on the graph, but it was
very small increments.
Only because of the same, but the other district costs have gone faster than the school, so incrementally, I don't think it's...
It's not large, it's not gone up significantly. So there's not one thing that jumps out as a primary driver.
No, I don't think so. Things ebb and flow. Right. Sometimes some things happen a little more.
Sometimes you get it.
I got two questions. One is everybody eligible? I mean, what has been your rate of eligibility?
For specialized education?
Well, I mean...
Most people in this room, but...
This is funny.
Most of us are over 22, so we're qualified.
Out of all the applicants that you get, is that 95%?
Well, it's not an applicant.
It's a referral.
It's a referral.
Okay, so, a referral, so how many are accepted?
17%. We are at 17%.
No, he wants to know if 100 people are referred, right, the 100 people get services, or the 99 mm-hmm. people get services.
Well, that's an interesting question, because there are as many factors that could play into that answer as there are stars in the sky. And let me explain why that is. Sometimes, and the educational process supports that general ed teachers work with children, identify challenges, work with families, work collaboratively amongst themselves, and if the child's contending with a disability, or they feel like there's something that they're not able to manage in the general ed classroom, then they'll refer through their special ed leadership in their building or through their principal, and we'll conduct the evaluations that Sally had walked us and talked about. The other option is for parents who maybe have a child at home and you get that mom or that dad gut feeling, something's not right, I want to talk to my kid's teacher, and then we might go through that process. One of the recent occurrences that's become rather costly for us in the evaluation side of the house is physicians who will refer children for special ed and not fully understand the evaluation process and the difference between a diagnosis and an identification of a disability for educational purposes, which is a lot of what Sally just talked about. I spend some time, and I know Sally has as well, and previous special ed directors here have, spend some time trying to talk to our physicians and try to talk to some of our medical community to help educate on the educational process. Because that, I'll tell you, quite frankly, is where we get the most referrals that end up being determined ineligible for special ed. And then that's a lot of, it's a few thousand dollars of man hours alone to conduct an evaluation. Right. So you start, and not to mention the time away from classes and the stress that's put on children and families to go through an evaluation process. It's exhausting for kids to experience that. So that's an area that I've identified in my role here and that we've talked about as a central office administration, that we need to start reaching out to our medical community to try to educate people.
So how do you control your costs? Like, is there a cap on it?
No.
There is no
cap. There's no cap.
No, I disagree. They control their costs by having more, for the generally, more in placement, mm-hmm. by having collaboratives, by, so they might not deny somebody, but they look for the most appropriate. But they're, if they can do it for less expensive, they're gonna. They could ship a lot more kids out and say, see you later.
Well, and your biggest cost control is having an effective and quality general ed program.
That's correct.
I mean, that's the biggest cost effective measure you can implement, right, is having supports in place so kids are supported and successful without needing to be in the special ed, right, process.
But he also mentioned cap, and there really isn't a cap. Yeah. It's open-ended.
The law has no mechanism for denying.
Yeah.
Actually prohibits denying in the law. So.
And there's a lot of processes a parent, if the parent disagrees, if we attempt to say we don't believe there's a disability, parents have a very lengthy legal process through mediation, arbitration, to, that adds to costs. And, that outcome, we try to do our best with data, but we have no control over that outcome.
I would imagine, to kind of address your question, though, at the end of the year, since we haven't been here a full year, that Beth is going to want to look at evaluations, referrals and evaluations, and how many did actually result in finding of eligibility, and those that have resulted in not finding of eligibility. And I can tell you from the two previous districts that I worked in, I mean, you had a lot of that. We have kids referred and then they weren't eligible, and you went through that whole process. But that's the whole point of this flow chart, that it's not like everybody that gets referred gets in. There is a process that has integrity to it, and as long as people are really following it and making the best decisions to the teams and making the best decisions to kids.
The other piece that I think is a nice follow-up to that is that special ed is not, in fact, a sentence. It's an opportunity to provide some specialized education, but there's a mechanism in the law to reevaluate a child every 3 years. and do a full, battery of evaluation to redetermine eligibility or to determine over again whether or not they're eligible. Whether or not they still require that specialized service to access the curriculum. You always prefer that students don't need that service, but for those that do, you want to do it really well. And that's really what we're committed to.
Basically, that picture.
Yeah. That's it.
Thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.blogspot.com. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is entitled Ernesto Mañana, copyright Michael Clark and Tintype Tunes in 2008, and used with their permission. I hope you enjoy.